Hi, Elsa.
Hi, Morgan.
So, can you just start off, like, explaining what your background is in sustainability and science?
Absolutely. So, I'm a second year studying ecosystem science and sustainability. I'm also minoring in sustainable energy. So, I have some of the, like, foundational background in chemistry, biology, things like that. But my classes so far have kind of specialized in, like, the ecosystem science and ecological side of things. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool. Okay. So how familiar are you with carbon capture?
A little. I've heard about it, but I won't say I'm an expert by any means.
Okay. So I just kind of wanted to go through sort of explaining what, like, my research has been doing and kind of talk about the work that River and I have done with carbon capture stuff. Okay. So we've been working with the Natural Resource Ecology Lab on campus, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's, like, through the ESS department. And they've basically been working on studying carbon capture potentials in soils.
Okay.
And the mechanism for that is essentially they have found, like, a few carbohydrates, a few sugars, and a few proteins that they think, like, won't break down in soil.
Okay.
And so, obviously, like, there's carbon in all organic molecules, so if the carbon is in the molecule and in the soil, then it's not in the air. It's, like, that's the basic idea, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, basically, they've been studying these sugars. There's, in organic chemistry, there's, like, D sugars and L sugars, and they're the same, so, like, glucose. There's a D glucose and an L glucose.
Gotcha.
D glucose is, like, the main one. It's kind of like how isotopes are, where,
sure.
like, 99% of oxygen will have, like, this many neutrons, but some of them have... Mm-hmm. It's kind of like that. So, like...
Most glucose is a D glucose.
It's most... Yeah. And it's kind of, like, left-handed versus right-handed. Mm-hmm. That idea of, like, they look the same, but they're mirror images of each other, but they're not... They don't fit in the same
Right. One
way.
Can never be flipped to be the
yeah,
other.
Yeah, exactly. So, since most organisms use D glucose... they are kind of looking into, like, L sugars that are, the flip versions that have the same functions in the, like, the plant cells, but microbes wouldn't really be able to, like, eat them because they, like,
okay.
they see it and they, like, don't know what to do with it.
Gotcha.
So they've been studying, it's called recalcitrance, which is basically, like, residence time in soil. So mm-hmm. once a plant produces this carbohydrate, and it goes into the soil, like, how long does it stay there? And they think that these sugars are, like, more recalcitrant. And so that's kind of the idea, is looking at these sugars, figuring out if microbes can eat it. Maybe, you know, like, Colorado microbes can eat it, but, like, microbes in Fiji soils can eat it. And
sure.
so trying to, like, source from all these different soils and figure out, like, if this is a... like, reasonable means to look at, like, large-scale
gotcha.
Carbon
Would
capture.
Would it be scalable?
Yeah, exactly. And then we've been working with Greg McKittrick. He's a grad student in ESS also, and he's on the team. But instead of studying sugars, he's actually studying a protein. So they think that microbes won't be able to eat this protein for, like, a different reason. And the idea is that... so it's called URI2, and it's from, like, a yeast species. And it's kind of like a model organism. A lot of people use this yeast species to, like, study cellular function. So there's a ton of researchers using this. And in the past few years, they've realized, like, oh, these cells aren't behaving like the way we thought they were going to. And what they found is that this protein, this URI2P protein that Greg is studying, is actually, like, getting, like, forming really big chunks.
Okay.
And kind of, like, mucking up the organism's, like, patterns.
Okay.
Or, like, its functions. And basically what they think it is, it's called a prion. Are you familiar with prions?
I've heard a little bit about them, but refresh my memory.
Okay. So basically, are you familiar, like, from bio? So, like, there's proteins have, like, their primary structure that's
right, yeah,
like
yeah.
you know the yes. amino acids. Secondary structure is like the the disulfide mm-hmm. bridges form or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then the tertiary structure is they, like, either make, like, A helixes, alpha mm-hmm. helixes, or beta sheets that are, yes. like, the zigzaggies. Yes. So this prion form, this, like, broken form of this protein, has, like, a higher beta sheet content
okay.
than the other ones. And so what happens is they're super, like, rigid, and they kind of, like, stick together okay. in, like, the beta sheets kind of intersect, gotcha. Kind of like that. And then it's kind of a chain reaction. So, like, once a normal protein is, like, floating by and it's, like, sees this beta sheet structure, it's, like, it, like, gets chunked in.
Oh,
it,
okay. like,
clasps in.
Sure.
And then it just forms, like, bigger and bigger aggregates. Yeah. And so, this is, like, the irregular form. It's the prion form of
okay.
this protein. So Greg has, like, isolated the gene that, like, codes for the, like, broken protein, the prion mm-hmm. protein, and that's what we've been studying, is because it's been aggregating. The idea is that it's so big, and most of the protein is, like, in the middle, mm-hmm. in the amyloid core is what they call it, that, like, the microbes can't really eat it, because it's in, like, a stable gotcha. Form.
It kind of builds, like, a wall around itself.
Yeah. And it's, like, really stable in the way that it is, so mm-hmm. microbes can't, like, denature it and, like, eat up the amino acids. That's cool. Yeah. So, what we had been doing is looking at those proteins that he's been studying and comparing it to, like, other model proteins that, mm-hmm. like, there's already a lot of research about, to kind of compare, can these microbes digest it, and, like, are microbes growing from... When they're only exposed to our protein as their only, like, food source, mm-hmm. can microbes grow? Because you can't really very easily measure, like, if the protein is there, but you can really easily measure, like, how much microbes are there. How gotcha. Many microbes are there. So we kind of assumed, like, the more microbes there are, the less of our protein is remaining.
Sure.
So then we've been working on that.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So... then what is the difference in the residence time in the soil for this versus the, like, non-prion form?
So we're still, like, getting results on this okay. protein specifically. We think it's going to be about, like, probably, like, 5 to 6 times longer. So okay. typically what you would see is, like, a regular protein that microbes can eat super easily. That would be in the soil anywhere from, like, 3 days to, like, 2 weeks, maybe.
Okay.
But prions have been studied a lot in soil because some prions can cause diseases depending on, like, the specific protein mm-hmm. that is forming that way. So, like, chronic wasting disease
okay.
in, like, in deer and stuff mm-hmm. Can actually, like, spread through the soil.
Oh,
so, say, like, there's, like, a deer carcass or whatever, the proteins, mm-hmm. like, the chronic wasting disease prion can, like, get in the soil, and they have found that it can stay, the prion can stay in the soil for, like, upwards of 5 years.
Oh, my God.
And so, obviously, that's really bad when it causes a disease, yeah. because if that's 5 years that it's still active, and, like, mm-hmm. any other grazer could come by and eat it and get chronic wasting disease themselves. But this protein that we're studying is... as far as, like, all the research has been done on it, like, it's not disease-causing at mm-hmm. all. So, it's, like, all the benefits of staying in the soil, but, like...
none of the dangers.
Yeah, exactly.
Very cool.
Yeah.
That's really neat. Sounds like a really cool application.
Thanks.